It is hour number two of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. At 1:45, where are we at in society? A circus thought dressing a monkey up like a Nazi was a good idea. It was not. At 1:30, we look ahead to the NFL divisional round matchups this weekend. And in mere minutes, it's our weekly chat with Justin Wells of Inside Texas. I'm Trey Elling, and sitting across from me is Chad Hastings.
Yes, indeed. Hour number two on a Wednesday. Before we talk to Justin, a good text just came in from our man Bevo Lance Jason. Says, this is a great example of why the show is great. You're both level-headed fans of each school, while at the same time you want the rival to be successful because pushing the other school to raise the level of the program relativity. Yes, exactly. I didn't read it well, but you expressed it pretty well.
He's using words that are too big for my tired brain right now,
Chad. He's using big old words there. But yes, Trey and I do love to have some Longhorn Aggie conversations occasionally, and it is fun. It's much more entertaining for, I know for me, as a fan of one of them, it is much more entertaining when they're both good. That's my goal for life, is to see them both be good consistently, because it hasn't happened in my lifetime. It hasn't happened ever. Only one year ever where they both won 10 games at the same time. It's crazy. All right, let's go to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina hotline and talk to Justin Wells. We do it every Wednesday about this time. Justin, of course, of Inside Texas. Go to InsideTexas.com for the very latest on recruiting stuff as we get closer to NSD2, but also Steve Sarkisian's introduction yesterday. He's at JustinWells2424 on Twitter, of course. Justin, how are you?
Hey, now, I'm watching my snowman melt, so I'm pretty good. We got some sunny skies with a chill breeze, so I'm enjoying this January, gentlemen.
Hey, Justin, how long did you and the kiddos spend outside playing in the snow on Sunday when it fell?
To the extent that I thought I learned what frostbite was. buildings, you know, we had a lot of snowball fights, and I realized about 20 minutes into it, one, my shoulder is sore, and two, my hands are frozen from holding these things. What a great experience, man!
Yeah,
to have my son and the dog in the backyard playing in the snow. I mean, guys, you can't buy happiness like that.
That is good stuff. Now, did you guys get it on Sunday afternoon like we did, or was it more like Sunday night, Monday?
We got it Sunday morning. It started coming, I believe, okay. Sunday morning when we started seeing a little bit of it come in. By 2 or 3 o'clock, it was sticking. By that time at night, I believe we had 4 or 5 inches of snow. And so it progressed from Sunday to Monday. But, you know, what a fun time to go out there and enjoy it. And now the snowman is gone and the sun is out, so it's time to have fun.
So, Justin, let's start with the press conference yesterday. Steve Sarkisian, not a digital version where you have to put the logo on him that way. It was legit. He was rocking the shirt. He flashed the hook'em horns and gave the speech, took the questions. What'd you think of press conference number one?
You know, a lot of times those first press conferences are the first impression that fans and alum and all involved get to see. And you never get a second chance at that. And I think he hit an absolute home run. Now, it's easy for you know, a reporter to say that about a team he covers, because the coach is always going to say the right things. He's always going to hit on the right points. But there was just a way that Sarkisian, it was just his delivery. He's been there. He's the guy that he made so many points about, you know, not being the destination at the end, you know, just the beginning. And things of that sort of being building authentic relationships with players and recruits. He said a lot of things that needed to be said. And I think another thing that went unsaid was his performance on Monday night calling plays for Alabama in the national championship. Everything he said kind of, you know, slid into some of the stuff we saw on Monday night. It's easy for a coach, a head coach, to come up there on the podium and say all the right things, but when you've seen it applied 24 hours before, then it's real. Then it becomes a winning recipe, and I think that Sarkisian absolutely knocked out this introductory presser, and the fact that he's already with Texas High School Football Coaches Association this morning shows you that Coach Sarkisian gets it, and that he's going all gas, no brakes.
Hey, Justin, speaking of Monday night, what impressed you most about Sark's side of the ball and Alabama's blowout win over Ohio State?
Oh, where do I begin? Let's see. you've got a Heisman Trophy winner in Devontae Smith. So what are you going to do to optimize his production? Let's get him on a linebacker. Let's put him in motion. Let's find the mismatch. This guy moved Devontae Smith around so much, all they did were find mismatches. They found that before the pre-snap stuff, the motion tells you this zone or man. It tells you if they're going to play, if corners are going to play up or back. It tells you what the linebackers are going to do. He used Ohio State against themselves, and it was brilliant because he got the ball in playmakers' hands in spots to make plays. It's so easy for a coach to say that. But when you actually see it happen against a really good team in Ohio State, that was the most impressive thing to me. Not to mention the fact that talking to recruits before and after the game, they noticed the same thing. A lot of the top prospects in the state of Texas were watching that game. And when I got to talk to them that night and the next day, they saw the same thing, the mismatches, the putting your players in positions to succeed. It was tremendous game calling. And at the end of the day, I kind of feel like Sarkisian was holding on to a lot of that stuff. Like, he knew that the Texas job was his, and he knew that he was going to have this national platform to display it. And so we saw it at its fullest. I'm sure, Ryan Day regrets it, but at the end of it, Sarkisian did an incredible job of moving his guys around and putting the ball in the position of the best players. We need to see a lot of the third and fourth street running backs. Why? Because you have Najee Harris. It's the same question we could have asked Coach Herman last year. We saw a bunch of other running backs, but not Bijan Robinson. Why? That's not going to be an issue with Coach Sarkisian. He's going to put the best guys on the field. He's going to put them in positions to succeed, and we saw that amply in the 2022 season with Alabama, culminating with that victory over the Buckeyes.
Hey, specific to Devontae Smith, and I ask this question knowing that you're not going to get somebody who's an exact clone of that guy. He just won a Heisman freaking trophy after all. But amongst the receivers on the current Longhorn roster, guys that will be with the team in 2021, who is most likely to fill that Devontae Smith role for Sark here in Austin?
That's a good question, and that's a tough one because, like you said, you're replacing a four-year starter that set every receiving record Alabama's ever had and a couple of SEC records along the way. My first thought was Josh Moore. They're kind of same in their frame and stature, both quick, both good hands, both with speed. Joshua Moore kind of resembles that guy if you're going to move him around and try to find the best spots. But there's some other guys out there. Jake Smith is one I think could really benefit from this because he's a guy, when you put him in the right positions, he's a tremendous receiver for this team. I know that the quarterbacks at Texas truly trust him, and they know that he's a guy that can make you miss. He can get yards per carry when he's put in that good position. So if I'm looking for a duplicate of Devontae Smith, it's probably going to be in the aggregate, but that would be a Jake Smith. That would be a Joshua Moore and a Kelvonte Dixon. If there's one player in this wide receiver room that resembles Devontae the closest, it's Kelvonte Dixon. Get ready for Moochie. That's his nickname, because that guy is going to be ready his sophomore year.
Talking with Justin Wells of Inside Texas. Justin, obviously what you hope for if you're a Texas fan is that there was going to be a positive recruiting reaction coming up. Didn't seem to take too long. Yesterday, four-star wide receiver out of Louisville, Armani Winfield, a 2022 kid, decides he's going to verbal to Texas. Talk to me about him. How big of a surprise was that for you as it happened for Sarkisian?
Well, if you're Coach Sarkisian and you got a chance to land one of the top receivers in the state, who everyone had crystal ball to Ohio State 2 hours before your introductory press conference, you take it. And that's exactly what happened. Armani's a 6'3", 180-pound four-star with double-digit offers. He's a guy that can stretch the field. He can play that outside receiver spot and really stretch defenses. We weren't surprised, to be completely honest. We knew about it a little bit ahead of time. Obviously, we always let the kid announce it on his own, and then we come behind with the story. But we weren't surprised that he committed. We were surprised that it happened so fast. We knew that there was going to be some momentum, that new coach smell. You know, we talked about it before. There's nothing better than that, than new shoe smell or new car smell. except for that fragrance of the new coach smell. It just permeates through the entire state, and it already you can already smell it, pick up that scent with Armani Winfield. This guy came in and committed. He's the second commit of the class of 2022. And if you're Coach Sarkisian, you're making a mark 2 hours before your press conference as you're announced the Texas coach. To me, that was very impressive. But also, I want you to give Andre Coleman, the wide receiver coach, a ton of credit. He'd been working on Armani for well over a year, built a great relationship there. And like Coach Sarkisian said, recruiting is about relationships, authentic relationships. Coach Coleman is really good at building those. We didn't get to see a lot of him in the last year because he didn't get to visit schools. He didn't get to go visit prospects. He had to install a lot of his receiver stuff, you know, from Zoom and not having a lot of practices. And so I want to give Coach Coleman a lot of credit for this one as well. But if you're Coach Sarkisian, that's a hell of a way to make a debut. Why don't you go ahead and grab one of the best receivers in the state?
Are there any other specific recruiting ripples that Longhorn fans should know about right now, either with the class of 2022 or the class that should be complete in the next month?
With 2022, you're going to see it. It's going to be more direct. It's going to slowly build up, but that's part of the game. You know, the NCAA has still extended that dead period, and I believe it's through April 15th as of today. And that's absolutely critical because you're going to have a lot of kids in the 21 class, guys, that are going to enroll early this week that have never seen campus. Hmm. Some guys that have never met their coaches, have never met their teammates. It's a different era. And so how fast we see that momentum continue to drive remains to be seen. But right now, I think you're going to see a surge on the offensive side of the ball. I think you're going to see, Tom Herman didn't have any problem recruiting quarterbacks. Coach Sarkisian will not have those issues as well. And I think you've got guys that you got to pay attention to in this 2022 class. Everyone wants to talk about Southlake Carroll Gunslinger. Quinn Ewers committed to Ohio State. He's a guy that really liked Coach Sarkisian when he was at Alabama, and they built a great relationship. You got to talk about the kid right down the road, Cade Klubnik, who's playing against Ewers in Dodgeball 1 on Saturday. That's another guy that Coach Sarkisian reached out to him before Monday. He was talking to him while he's still on the job at Bama. That's how important Cade was to him and to get to know Coach Todd Dodge. And so I think you're going to see a ripple on the offensive side. I think hopefully we're going to see an uptick in the offensive line recruiting because each position at Texas has recruited pretty well outside of wide receiver and offensive line. We've already seen a jolt from the receiver bunch, and I think you could see more of that here in the future. But the offensive line is the one that really has to make an impact. And when you're talking to guys like Nato from Allen and Devin Campbell from Arlington Bowie, they're impressed with the way that Kyle Flood, the offensive line coach at Alabama that expected to be in Austin, they're impressed with how he uses those guys. It's one thing to recruit the 4- and 5-star linemen. It's a completely different story to develop them. And that's something that Coach Sarkisian, Coach Flood, and those guys have been able to do. So I don't know how soon you'll see more of a ripple, but I anticipate it being on the offensive side, and I anticipate the quarterback discussion to get even better.
Talking with Justin Wells of Inside Texas. Justin, I want you to talk to me a little bit about L.J. Johnson, 2021 class. We talked to you about him before, the running back, Cy-Fair running back. I'm fascinated by the decision he's about to make because not only is it, you know, it's a house-divided decision, it's a Longhorn Aggie thing, but the argument that each team is going to try to make to him as a running back, there's some substance on both sides, right? He's got to decide, does he want to be utilized like Isaiah Spiller was, and he's one of the best running backs in the SEC, or did he watch Monday night and think, wow, 29 touches for Najee Harris, and that's what Bijan Robinson's going to look like maybe at Texas, and do I want to go join that? From what you know about L.J. Johnson and the style he plays and what he might want to do, which argument do you think might ring more true for him with what he thinks of in terms of, you know, what kind of back he wants to be?
Oh, you put me on the spot, brother. I think, honestly, you kind of have to side with A&M's argument because you have to understand and just be admired. Coach Jimbo Fisher has done a great job. That's a very well-coached team. There's a reason they finished in the top five in the 2020 AP Top 25 poll. That is an incredibly well-coached team. And so they do a lot with the running back. They let them know that they're going to use them. And they recruited an offensive line That was so much better than what Texas brought in with their offensive line. Now, on the other argument, last year's O-line that came in, we learned that they were actually better than we thought. We saw in the last month and a half, 2 months of the season for Texas, and now you're looking at 8 returners that had valuable experience on this team. And so either side makes a good argument. They really do. Both teams are up and coming. Both teams are going to really showcase the running back position. It comes down to, would you rather live in College Station or would you rather live in Austin? I know that LJ's built a good relationship with the recruits at A&M. I know he's built a great relationship with Stan Drayton and Brian Carrington at Texas. And so, you know, with LJ, it's going to come down to Texas or A&M. Like you said, it's going to be a house divided. I'm not sure. I think both sides have a valid argument. A&M can make a great case, but so can Coach Sarkisian as well. So at the end of the day, do you want to run beside Isaiah Spiller or do you want to run beside Bijan Robinson? I know prospects that have had to make harder decisions. So this one shouldn't be too bad for LJ, but this is one to monitor, guys. He goes back and forth. One day I feel like it's Texas. The next day I feel like it's A&M. This is going to be a head-to-head battle, and I'm really interested to see how it plays out.
What do we think about timeline here, Justin? Do you think he's going to stretch it all the way to February, or could this be in the next couple weeks we find out?
It has to be in the next couple weeks. He's an early enrollee. This guy has to be on campus in less than 2 weeks.
Okay, gotcha.
So he's got to make this decision, you know, lickety-split. And this has been building up. I met LJ 2 years ago. And you know, he's such a great kid and a great competitor. He's going to bless any running back room with whoever he chooses. I know Coach Drayton has done everything in his power. Now he's got Coach Sark to help push him down the stretch. But he's also paying attention to Coach Fisher, because what Jimbo and those guys are doing in College Station is noticeable, and they're very, very well coached.
Another major decision that Longhorn fans are paying close attention to right now is who Steve Sarkisian selects as his defensive coordinator. What's your best guess today, January 13, 2021, on who that next Texas DC will be?
Well, oftentimes on InsideTexas.com, when I post the best guess, that means it's that person. But this is a way for me to just let you know that's my guess. So I'm not going to throw the best guess. That way the members at IT don't hit me up in about 20 minutes wondering what the answer is. At the end of the day, I think it's going to come down to Pete Golding or Zach Arnett. You got two very young, up-and-coming guys on the defensive side of the ball, both with experience. Both have been in the state of Texas and have some recruiting ties. And they both have attacking styles, whether it be a 4-3 or a 3-3-5. These are both very competent guys. At the end of the day, we're going to see who Sarkisian picks, because some of these defensive coaches have already been picked. So it leads you to believe that it's going to be one or the other or some mystery coach when you've already got Blake Gideon and Terry Joseph and Bo Davis. Oftentimes, you get the DC first, then you get the assistants. Well, this is done backwards, which leads me to believe Sarkisian might have his guy the whole time. If I'm making a guess, it's either Golding or Arnett or some mystery coach. But either one of those guys, I think, would be a good jolt for the defense.
Justin, let me get a quick basketball question in here. The blowout win at Kansas, followed by a little storybook ending for Andrew Jones with an incredible shot. What are you looking for tonight when Texas hosts Texas Tech?
Man, don't you love talking Texas basketball?
this version I do.
I love it. I love it, man. You're not asking me about the Cowboys. That's the beauty of it. We're talking about Texas basketball. And listen, the Big 12, they're going through that gauntlet right now, and we keep saying, okay, this is where it's going to get tough. This is where you're going to see a couple losses, because the conference is so talented top to bottom. Yet, Texas is still number 4. Yeah, Texas is still looking pretty clean through the Big 12 slate. Tech's going to be a major test. Anytime Chris Beard brings the team, you need to be prepared. One of the best coaches in college basketball, no question. Matt McClung, the transfer from Georgetown, somehow got better. And so now you have to deal with the team that's going to attack you. They've got that deliberate offense that they're going to crash the boards. They're not going to take unnecessary shots. They're going to make the extra pass. They're going to do all the little things that Chris Beard has instilled into them. But what they don't have and what Texas has are the athletes and a group of guys that are getting better every day. When players love to play with each other, that's when great things happen. And the chemistry on this team is so outstanding. From Matt Coleman to Courtney Ramey to Kai Jones, Jericho Sims, Greg Brown III. There's so many guys. I feel like I'm missing guys that I'm not naming because each one knows their role and each one is starting to flourish in their role. So tonight is going to be another test, gentlemen. It's going to be another test of, you know, of their wills because Texas Tech will come in prepared. They'll come in ready. And I just love the fact that Texas basketball is relevant. We're talking about a top five team. We're talking about a team that could get a 1, 2, or 3 seed in March. And I just love the fact that these games matter.
Our last question for you this week, Justin, is our question of the week. It's based on a conversation I had with the author of a book called One Last Song. The premise is if you could listen to one more song before leaving planet Earth, what would it be? So what is your one last song and why?
It's easy. Garth Brooks, The Dance.
Wow.
It's the best final song of everything. You could play it in any aspect. Leaving Earth, at a funeral, at a celebration, whatever. It's all encompassing. It's the greatest say no more, I'm on my way song you can have. If I've got one song I got to jam right before I leave this planet, I'm playing The Dance by Garth Brooks.
See, Justin went exactly down the path that I did, Trey. You asked me the question, and all I could think about was, like, you know, right on the nose, songs about death or songs about peace or songs about whatever. I didn't think of The Dance, but you're right, Justin. Lyrically, it's perfect. That is a perfect song to head out the door with. You're right.
What song did you pick, Chad?
You know what? I haven't picked one yet. I'm protesting this question on many levels. It's like if I had 12,000 kids and you ask me which is my favorite, like but the ones I thought of have been that type of theme. Like I thought of a song called May Peace Find You Tonight by Reckless Kelly, and I thought of
I've got one. I think I've got one for you.
Okay.
Peace Train, Cat Stevens.
That's a great song. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. That's the kind of thing I've been thinking of. There's a Bob Dylan song I love called Not Dark Yet. And it's not dark yet, but it's getting there. It's just this awesome kind of, you know, those are the kind of songs I've been thinking of because it is such an unfair question in many ways. But you picked a nice one. I like that. That's a good call. That's Justin Wells, Inside Texas. Go to InsideTexas.com. Lots going on in the world of the Longhorns. Justin, we always appreciate it, man. Good luck with the melting snowmen and good luck getting your fingers back. And we'll talk next week.
Nothing but love, gentlemen.
Thanks, brother.
It is one of those weird, Trey, you know, when you like you haven't played a sport in a while and then you try to get back at it. When you know, if somebody golfs out there the first time you head to the range when you haven't played golf in a while, the muscles will kind of tense up on you. The snow muscles we never use.
Oh, yeah.
So the muscles that are required to build snowmen, or in your case, a snow fort, because your daughter expected way too much.
But those, she was going to build a snow fort, and then, oh, Dad, can you come here and do that for me?
I had one that was related to. I've just done a restringing project on some Christmas lights at the house, putting new fresh lights on there. And the muscles that are required in your fingers to use, like, little cable ties and stuff like that over and over and over again, I have another one I need to do, but I'm literally waiting 2 or 3 days till my hands come back.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like an old man with, you know, arthritic hands after all that.
I was sore in the lower to mid back in ways that I usually am not, and that is staying in decent physical shape as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because of what we were having to do as we made the snowman and started to build the snow fort before my kids hit eject to go inside to watch television.
That made me a little. I've never heard that. And of all that, a Texas kid requested that.
Well, here's the thing. Well,
this child's never dealt with snow. I'd like a snow fort, Father.
She's incredibly ambitious. But here's the thing that Texas kids don't get about snow forts is that, yeah, the snow fort does involve packing snow, but normally the fort is being built as part of something else, too, to make it a little bit easier to actually build the fort.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Either that or you've got like 2 feet of snow.
That's tough.
Because by the time I was done building a 9-inch snow fort that was like 4 feet across and had a couple feet trailing to the back, like all the snow in the area was used up. So she didn't realize how much snow it requires to actually build the fort. Because I built it like I don't know, like 3 or 4 inches tall at first. She's like, no, Dad, can you go this high? And she held her hand like 2 feet in the air. I'm like, no, I can maybe give you a foot.
You're like, honey, we're going to need to live in Wisconsin to get
exactly.
to get what you want there. All right. Somebody just texted in, when will the staff be announced? We don't know that exactly. I don't think. In fact, Steve Sarkisian didn't really lay out a timeline for that, but he did say sooner than later. He said, you know, he would like that to happen sooner than later. I'm guessing in the next week or so, we definitely get some of those names rolling in. I really thought we may see some stuff yesterday leading into the press conference, but I guess they're not quite ready to announce.
Does anybody ever go later than sooner?
No, probably not. Another thing you do at a press conference, you would never say that, right?
Yeah.
We're going to take our time, even if it takes too long. Nobody ever says that at a press conference.
When are we going to get a new DC in? Later than sooner.
Yeah, right. Much later. Way later. We're gonna go a while on this thing. All right, coming up, we will talk some NFL division round, get you some updates as we head in. Maybe some good news for Cleveland going into the game with Kansas City, plus some other notes from around the league. Before the hour is done, it's Where Are We At in Society. Trey's got a story about a circus in Russia that got in trouble. He'll tell you why coming up on the Horn.
Looking back on the memory of,
oh man,
the dance we shared.
I get why you did it, but remember?
Well, drop it down and dump 8 seconds.
I think there's one. Okay, this
it's on YouTube.
Somebody might help me out here. There's something. There's a new. What is the streaming service? There's one of them. I think maybe now he has an agreement with.
Ah, gee, it was not Spotify.
There's a few artists. Garth is one. Prince is one. And I'm trying to think of the others, where if you try to find just a normal version of, hey, you can find this, for some reason it's really difficult to find.
Yeah, that was a grainy version. Well, I apologize to Garth Brooks if you're upset with me over starting to play one of your songs as an intro. We did just give lot of love, though.
No. Garth ain't mad, because that ain't Garth. That's what I'm saying. It's impossible.
That wasn't?
No, it's impossible to find Garth actually singing the songs. You can't do it. You think you're finding it, but it's some rando in Minnesota that's like singing the song. You're like, wait, what's going on here? I thought that was Garth Brooks. Oh, I don't think that was Garth.
What?
I don't believe so. I am a moderate Garth Brooks fan. I don't believe that was Garth's version of that song. When the guy started singing, I didn't think it sounded like.
But if I find a Garth Brooks version, can I play it on these airwaves?
Oh, yeah, that I don't think is a problem. I'm just telling you the challenge of finding it. It's really hard to find the actual Garth version of anything.
Well,
it's difficult. That is because Justin Wells decided that The Dance was his song for the last song he would hear on Earth. That's pretty good. We're getting some other ideas. Running on Empty, Jackson Brown. That's a good choice. Hadn't thought of that. Bob Marley, Three Little Birds. I know you love that song.
Fantastic song.
Living a Dream by Archangels is a great one. George Strait, This is Where the Cowboy Rides Away.
That's
perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I like it. That's good. I would assume like, a lot of people would say Sinatra's My Way, a good ending. So it's cliche, but I could see somebody going with that. That was
the song that Kevin dedicated to Justine and me at our wedding.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it was great.
Somebody said that definitely wasn't Garth Brooks.
Oh, man. Well, that shows how little I listen to Garth Brooks.
Yeah, it's weird, though. Somebody says On the Turning Away by Pink Floyd. I hadn't thought of that one.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That could work. That's what I've been looking for. Like, once you, I'm just such a music snob that it's not going to be a non end of the road death kind of song. End of the Road, Boys to Men. There it is.
Oh, no, we've got.
Oh, come on.
To the end of the road.
And then you just die after that? Come on.
Let you go. The biggest things for me when considering my song, Chad, are obviously one, loving the song, but two, a song that has been with you through thick and thin, and three, a song that I can sing aloud from beginning to end also if I really want to.
I see. Okay. I like your ingredients there. That works. Let us know what you think. 337-3776. It's our question of the week. What one song would you hear before leaving Earth? Later in the week, we'll play Trey's interview with an author that wrote a book Then he asked that very question to over 30 different musicians, and I'm told one of the musicians picked his own. Well, you told us who it was.
Spoiler alert, Killer Mike. Which makes a lot of sense.
That is awesome.
But we find out why.
We do find out. Okay, so I want to hear the story of why before the week is over. Also a reminder, you got high school basketball cranked up on the IHS Fan Network this week. You've got Westwood and Cedar Ridge coming up on Friday, 8 o'clock tip. With Rodney Rodriguez and Rick Epstein. You can hear the game at hornfm.com. You can go to flexatx.com or the Horn app. Also, Snoop and the Flex ATX show has moved to Thursday nights, 8 to 10. The interviews and everything, all the coverage that you expect, but now moved to Thursday nights. And you can also check out flexatx.com, flexatx.com, for all your high school sports coverage. All right, let's jump into the NFL division round stuff and maybe start with good news for Cleveland. If you are one of those people that wants Kansas City to lose, you don't want Kansas City going back-to-back, you'd like to see Baker Mayfield pull this off. Maybe you're a Lake Travis fan out there and you're thinking, hey, want to see my man Bake go to Kansas City and end this thing.
And I'm none of those things, so continue.
Yeah. The good news would be they get the two defensive backs back, the two corners back that they lost last week and the last 2 weeks, really, because of the COVID stuff. Denzel Ward and Kevin Johnson are back. That's good news. The extra good news, Trey, could be that Joel Bitonio could be back. They're hoping to get him off the COVID list. This is Pro Bowl quality guard that you'd be getting back. I looked up the numbers today. Here's how Cleveland could win the game. They are third in the league running the ball. We all know Cleveland can tote the rock. Kansas City is 21st in rush defense. So to me, Trey, this is a game where it's a great style matchup. Kansas City wants this thing up and down the field. They want to sling it all around. Cleveland has got to pull them into a full Nelson kind of football game. They got to drain the amount of time they have, make Mahomes watch you, and just go up and down the field, but do it slowly. Lots of move the sticks, lots of 12-play drives. Just see if you can limit Mahomes' ability.
Yeah, keeping the ball out of his hands. That is one strategy that has proven effective at times. And if any team left in the playoffs has the ability to do so in terms of handing the football off to two talented running backs, it's the Cleveland Browns right now.
Yeah. I mean, they busted Pittsburgh up in that rush defense of theirs.
You know, it's just so crazy that you can give it to Nick Chubb for the first two-thirds of a drive. And then you have the luxury of bringing in Kareem Hunt after that, who I think would be starting for an overwhelming majority of NFL teams if he was on another roster.
Yeah, and the confidence of Baker Mayfield continues to go up and up and up. And if you run the ball like that, you set him up for makeable situations, makeable throws. He feels like he's got the confidence going, and he's been hitting some big-time NFL windows.
It's so funny how this offense really started to evolve after Odell Beckham Jr. went out. You would assume that would set them back. And maybe initially it did for just a little bit. Once they got beyond the idea of no longer having that number one guy, they really blossomed from there.
So weather-wise, that game, we are looking for 43 degrees, best weather we're going to have of the weekend. 43, not much chance of precipitation. Green Bay is going to be cold, 34 degrees, only a 25% chance of rain or any kind of precipitation. It probably wouldn't be rain. Well, it'd be, yeah, just rain, just over freezing. And then Buffalo, the low is 31. Let's remember, that's a night game.
Low.
Low of 31, but a 40% chance of snow.
That's them guessing that it might snow.
And Lamar Jackson this week has admitted he's never played in the snow before. This is a Southern kid, played at Louisville and grew up in the South. So he's never played in the snow. He says he hopes it doesn't snow. If you're a Buffalo fan, you need weather. You need weather, wind, messiness. Buffalo is okay with that game being an ugly weather kind of game.
Louisville isn't exactly south, though, so he has played in cold weather conditions before. Heck, he plays his pro ball in Baltimore, and it obviously gets cold there, too. Snow is obviously a much different factor. I do wonder if that benefits Baltimore a little bit more, though, because overall they have the better rushing attack. Even though Josh Allen is very capable with his legs, Buffalo has not been a good team on the ground this year. They've had their moments with Singletary, but more so Zach Moss. But I feel like Buffalo, this game tightens up just a little bit if it is snowy when they do kick things off and throughout the course of those four quarters on Saturday night.
So, Trey, real quick here, these four games, I'm confident that Green Bay and Kansas City are better than the teams they're playing. My question for you would be New Orleans and Buffalo, the other two home teams. How confident in those teams are you right now that they're better than who they're playing?
Buffalo, yes. New Orleans, no.
Okay.
I think Tampa Bay is the better of those two teams.
Hmm.
New Orleans might be a little bit better defensively, but Tampa is the better offensive team, in my opinion, especially if Mike Evans is pretty close to 100% and good to go, which it looks like he's going to be.
I certainly hope you're right. As a fan of the Bucs, I want them to be the better team. I just wonder how much of what they've done has been against lesser competition, and can that run game be consistent? Can they really pack that run game on the road and get it when they need it? Because last week they got it going a little bit.
Yeah, Fournette looked good last week.
Last week they got it going a little bit, but they. I understand Washington's front is good for some things. I just don't know if I trust it against a team like Washington. And they've done good things against Detroit, and they've done good things against other teams that, to me, aren't that substantial. I feel like the Saints are better front to back as a football team, but I hope you are right that Tampa Bay's better.
Better than Tampa.
I think they're better than Tampa as a front to back whole football team. I think they're better, especially if Michael Thomas is going to play.
But you're not convinced that the Bills are better than the Ravens.
No, that's the one. The way Lamar Jackson's playing right now, I've got to at least give him the respect that I think they can go there and win that game.
Okay.
I'm not going to make Buffalo a guaranteed winner in that ball game. I think Baltimore can go make that really interesting.
The individual matchup that I'm looking forward to the most this weekend right now, Chad?
Yes.
Jalen Ramsey and Davante Adams. Oh, that is going to be fun.
Yeah, with Aaron Rodgers trying to get the receiver the ball while Aaron Donald is trying to crush him.
That too.
Oh, dude, that's awesome. Yeah, you can turn it away all you want when the Rams have the ball. Do not miss when the Packers have it.
No.
That's going to be awesome. Good stuff in the division round. Remember, Saturday you get later starts. Two games a day. 3:30 and 7 are the basic start times on Saturday, and then you've got 2 and 5:30 basically on Sunday. All the networks will make sense. NBC gets the night game on Saturday, but everything else will be where you would normally see it, CBS or Fox. All right, that is some NFL discussion for you. Coming up at 2, back to the Longhorn discussion. What did you think of Coach Sarkisian's first press conference? We'll get back into that. Up next, Trey will tell you why a circus in Russia is in trouble. This is The Horn. Now, this one I definitely don't know. Trey's going ELO today. What do you
Come
got?
Come on, man. Last Train to London.
Last Train to London. Jeff Lennon, ELO. By the way, thanks to one of our texters, and that's my bad. I mentioned it yesterday that Zach Moss is going to be out the rest of the season.
And wow.
I did not hear Trey mention him as I was getting ready to say what I was going to say, and we do that from time to time. So I apologize there. But Zach Moss is out with an ankle injury. Mentioned that yesterday. So, Trey, it is going to be even more important that Buffalo get a lot out of what's my man's name? I can never remember. Devin Singletary.
Yeah.
There it is.
Zach Moss has been the better running back at toting the rock this year. So with him out, if it does end up snowing in Buffalo, I think that Baltimore has that much more of a benefit in things having to be on the ground just a bit more.
Plus, that sucks for Zach Moss. He played at Utah. He'd love the snow.
Yeah.
He's all about that.
Exactly. It makes sense also that I missed that news yesterday because I didn't pay a lick of attention to sports yesterday.
Yeah, there was a lot flying around yesterday, and that was one of the updates. We also just mentioned that Cleveland does get Denzel Ward and Kevin Johnson back off the COVID list, and they're hoping to get Joel Bitonio, the guard, back off the list. We got more NFL notes and some other stuff coming up with Stems and Seeds at 2:45. Up at 2, we'll go back to the Longhorn discussion with Coach Sarkisian's first press conference. Right now, though, let's see if we can fix society a little bit.
Where are we at in society today?
No official sponsor right now, so I'm going to give my buddy Jake at SLP Lawn Care some love. SLPLawnCare.com. Even though you're not mowing the yard as much right now, since we're obviously in the dead of winter, they may be able to help out with some of those side jobs. They were at my place yesterday, did a great job of trimming the trees in the front yard. It was noticeable as soon as I walked outside to say what's up to Jake. They might be able to help you out with that side project right now as well. contact them to find out at slplawncare.com. Chad, we have a circus, let's call it a little bit of a fiasco.
All right.
A circus in Russia, of all places.
Okay.
Russian prosecutors have launched an investigation after a monkey wearing a Nazi uniform performed at a state circus recently. The show also featured goats wrapped in Nazi flags and swastikas, according to the Russian news website Znak.
My God.
The performance was part of a show at the Udmurtia Circus in the city of Ishvik on January 8th. It was commissioned by the Russian Orthodox Church, which said that the show symbolized the spurning of Nazism. I guess that's why the animals were wearing the Nazi garb and not the humans.
See, this is just like when a sports figure tries to tell you something about Hitler. And in their clarification of what they're trying to say, they end up getting themselves in trouble. Like, you just probably shouldn't even enter into the discussion.
Yeah, it's probably still too soon for even trying to have some fun like that with Nazism.
Plus, if overcoming Nazism is the only theme you can come up with for your circus, maybe take lunch and then come back and think of something else.
For a circus.
A circus, right.
We're trying to make a political statement on Nazism.
The idea of a circus, I believe, and we don't have them in America anymore, but I think the idea was that families would go to this, right?
Yeah. It's a circus that includes animals, so yes, families will be there. So state prosecutors said they first became aware of the performance while monitoring the internet and have since launched a, quote, investigation into the display of Nazi symbols. Russian law forbids public displays of Nazi symbols.
Well, there's that, too.
Is that a good or a bad idea to make the display of public Nazi symbols illegal?
The display of...
Should it be illegal?
I mean, my first gut says yes, but I get what you're asking, because if you make it illegal, do you then draw in other problems if you go that far? But for a public display like that, for a public showing of something, for a circus, that again, that's designed for families.
It's at a performance. And even though it's a circus, it's still considered performance art in a way, correct?
Yeah, that's true. You'd probably have to throw a warning on that, wouldn't you? Maybe let the families know on the way in, hey, we're trying something this year with the circus. Bear with us.
So I'm glad you mentioned a warning, because the Orthodox Church has defended the performance. It said that the show was intended to be, quote, a symbol of not just the victory over fascism, but also the spurning and the global condemnation of the ideals of Nazi Germany.
The best way we could think to convey that was a monkey in an SS outfit.
And the church has tripled down, too, saying that it is covered by an exemption signed by Vladimir Putin.
Oh, no.
In March of 2020, the exemption allows the display of Nazi symbols, providing that they create a negative attitude towards Nazi ideology.
Wow. Okay. I guess.
The monkey and the goats were commanded by trainers wearing Soviet uniforms during the show. So the Soviet... The Soviet soldiers were the ones ordering the Nazi soldiers around.
I see. So because they ordered the Nazi soldiers around, that's seen as negative towards Nazism.
Yeah.
Okie dokie. Okay. All right. I will give them credit for one thing. The fact that you had a circus and the treatment of the animals was not the first problem people had. That's rare, Trey. That's rare.
You interested in knowing the name of the monkey?
Sure.
Monk Kampf.
That's not real.
That wasn't my best.
You made that up. You totally made that up. Wow. The links you will go to get people to show up to a circus in Russia. Okay, there you have it. All right, coming up your 2 o'clock hour, we'll talk Texas football. Steve Sarkisian's first press conference yesterday. What did you like about it? Anything you didn't like about it? For most, the most discussion we've heard, everybody thinks he won the first press conference. Kind of set up to do that with what we saw Monday night, a good bit of recruiting news because of it, and then he steps to the podium, thought he did a pretty good job. We'll go back over that. Let us know if there's anything that you had an issue with. I'll tell you about, speaking of an issue, before we get into that, I was as upset yesterday driving my car as I have been in a long, long time at somebody else on the highway and something that they were not doing and were not aware of. I'll get on them next on the Horn.